Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Talk Junkies, where tonight's going to be a very interesting night, as it is each and every single week. I'm not really doing it every single week, but every other week or whatever it is. But thank you all for joining Talk Junkies this evening. The last podcast that I did was with Howdy Mikowski. Very interesting podcast where we get into the Matrix, the inner workings of the Matrix. We talk a little bit about, on a previous podcast that we did with each other about NPCs and how Howdy believes a little bit, and I'm on that train as well, that maybe not everyone is human and people might be NPCs, but he describes in a way what that is and what that means. And then we get a little bit more into the Matrix, the inner workings of it, mediators, just the inner workings, like I said, with Howdy Mikowski, and he's fantastic. All the subscribers we got from Howdy, I appreciate you all tuning in to Talk Junkies. I hope you all will enjoy the content that is going to be coming your way. And this evening, I have an OG guest coming on Talk Junkies to talk about the Constitution of the United States, which we do each and every single time that this gentleman comes on. He's very well informed on the Constitution when it comes to specifics on it. And everyone can interpret it whatever way it is that they want to interpret it. But I think that this gentleman has a very good grasp on the way that the Founding Fathers truly wanted it to be interpreted. Regardless of what that means, the Constitution still has basis of what it is and how we live our lives on this land and how we are and how we act towards each other as people in this society. And I think that we should hold more value to this piece of paper or this book or whatever it is you want to call it, the Constitution of the United States, more seriously. And there's no better person to bring on this OG guest who's been on multiple times. Dan Cox, how you doing, man? Thanks for joining.
Well, glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Good to
catch up with you again.
You as well, man. So again, I did a podcast with Howdy a couple weeks ago, and actually on YouTube, it's been 5 years now. We were at 950 subscribers, and Howdy was very generous and shared the video in his community, and it did take Talk Junkies over to 1,000 subscribers. So I greatly appreciate that. So there's going to be more of his people listening to this podcast. So thank you all for tuning in. But before we get into the Constitution stuff, man, I know that you kind of pay attention to what's going on around in the world. Man, have you seen the shit that's going on in Maui right now?
Yes.
That's some crazy shit, man.
Now, there is really some crazy shit going on because have you seen what I think it was KTLA had a report that some meteorologists said that Chinese satellites were shooting laser beams at Hawaii. This is an actual television station in LA.
Oh, sorry. You have to restart that one. Yeah, Skype didn't like that.
Okay. Yeah. Somehow my internet connection just crapped out. Anyway, there was this thing that I saw from one of the television stations in LA that was saying that they had reports from meteorologists or astronomers or whatever that said that there were Chinese satellites that were shooting lasers, green lasers, down on Hawaii when these fires started. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's what caused it, but it's like, there's all this different stuff that's going on, you know, the weather that they're talking about and the drought that's happening in Hawaii and all these people that were killed and just the massive devastation.
Yeah. You know, and I guess my question for you is, when you look back at like some of the California wildfires, and even you look at the recent Canada wildfires, and you kind of just like look at the aftermath of those types of situations. And I know in Hawaii, it was like a hurricane that was like a dry hurricane. I don't know if any water eventually came in or not, but you had 80-mile-an-hour winds that were coming through Hawaii that could have fueled the fire very easily. So if you have like Chinese satellites or balloons or whatever it is shooting down lasers, like they had it planned. They were waiting for the perfect time, and they did it. And if it were Chinese spy balloons or satellites, I think that do they, on that video that you watched from that news station, was there video evidence of it?
They just, I didn't see a video. They just had a picture of it, and they had the caption underneath.
Got you. So if China has direct energy weapons or whatever it is you want to call it, the United States has them as well. And we can't credit China for doing the ones in California or the ones in Canada. And not only that, they naturally occur as well within the Earth, right? You know, you have lightning strikes and stuff of that matter where you have natural wildfires. But on the magnitude that we've been seeing lately, you have to kind of do a deeper dive into it and not just necessarily trust the mainstream media of what it is that they're presenting to you. Specifically, when you go to Canada, I don't know if you're familiar with those wildfires. You saw New York, the aftermath of the orange skies, and everything was orange. It was really strange. But there was this gentleman on YouTube, and he was watching weather patterns, and he was watching it develop. And it was as if all the lightning strikes happened at one time in multiple different areas, hundreds of miles away from each other, that sparked all of the fires all at one time. And that just seems a little strange to me.
Yeah. I even saw a video of they'll do controlled burns
right.
in large areas sometimes. And they'll use sometimes they'll have ground crews, but they'll also have helicopters flying along with these buckets of flaming stuff that they can drop.
Yes, I've seen that. I'm like, dude, that is not how you control wildfires, by dropping fire on fire. That makes no sense to me.
Right. And so they were just they just started using it to spark more fires.
Right.
So you know, these are not accidental. You know, they were talking about, you remember those big wildfires we had a couple of years ago in California, where they said they had caught multiple arsonists setting them off.
Yeah.
You know, so there's something going on.
I believe
it's not people working on an agenda that favors us. You know, they've got their own plan going on that is about burying New York City in smoke, you know, and making that an unhealthy environment for whatever reason.
And it almost feels like, to me, it's one of the first things you hear about whenever you see Maui and the devastation, which is horrific. And my prayers are out to all those people. But the first thing you hear about is climate change. Like, that's one of the first words you hear. And you and I have had a very specific conversation on that, specifically months ago, about climate change. And what's funny about that, Dan, and I know you did your research on that, is you have politicians who bring up the points that you brought up as well in that podcast about parts per million and how it's been throughout the ages of time, and how right now it's actually pretty, it's a good place that we're in, honestly, when it comes to parts per million, whatever, all that. You do a better job of describing that. And then you have Project Veritas, who exposed a CNN executive producer, I believe it was, and he said after COVID, the next thing that mainstream media is going to push is climate change. So when you factor in all those things, it just makes you wonder, I guess. And we'll never really ever know if it was direct energy weapons in Maui that caused it. But it's still very interesting to talk about and try and dig deep into the finer details of it and try and figure out what it is.
Yeah, because I mean, maybe they've always had droughts in Hawaii, but I always imagined Hawaii to be, you know, this lush tropical forest kind of, you know, sporadic rain all the time. You know, you could expect there to be rain pretty much, you know, daily, you know, cause it's a lush jungle environment. And so, you know, the idea that they had some kind of a drought there, the minute that I heard that there was a fire there, the first thing I thought was that a volcano had erupted.
Right.
Because we hear about volcanoes in Hawaii all the time. There's always volcanic activity. But when they came out and said it was this wildfire and this drought and, you know, the special weather situation, I was just like, that's just odd. Just something. And the amount of devastation, you know, throughout. And again, you know, the people who are driving around, I saw a couple of videos of people driving around where there was all this devastation, but in the middle of all of it, there were trees that were untouched.
Right.
you know, next to cars that had been completely burned. And it's just like, how does that exactly work? You know, I mean, this, you can't have a fire that intense that wouldn't burn or kill one of those trees. And it appeared to be completely untouched.
Right. And you see that in other instances of other wildfires that happened in California. And the ones in California are more suspicious when it comes to what you just described. And again, I suggest everyone, if you haven't seen the Maui fires, just look it up on the internet and just look at the aftermath from an aerial drone footage. And it looks like an atomic bomb was dropped on Hawaii, honestly, or Maui, wherever it is. That's exactly what it looks like. And I don't know of any wildfire that it gets hot enough to basically almost put a car to just nothing but like ash. Burn the paint, burn the tires, burn everything. The cars just look, I'm like, damn, that fire had to have been so hot. But like you said, there are some questions, right? You see pole lines, you see trees that are not completely demolished, but yet everything else is completely fried. And specifically, this is what I would ask anyone. Go back to California and look at some of those wildfires, and you see specifically, you'll see, let's say, a house here, and a house here. All three have burnt down. And then there'll be a house next to it, untouched. And then it skips a house, and then that house is on fire, and the next house is on fire. So in California, you see things getting skipped. Trees, bushes, power lines, and houses get skipped. So that's just kind of, you're right. How do you explain that? How does science explain it? How do you specifically say this was just a wildfire that was sparked by, even if it was someone who threw a cigarette, right, into a tree or into a bush and it caused that? That makes no sense that it would skip houses or trees to be caught on fire. Right. That makes no sense.
Especially when they're talking about high winds pushing it.
Right.
You know, because the wind is going to push it in that particular direction. When you see the path of the fire going in this, it's not going to just suddenly, you know, hop over, you know, or skip over something, because that wind is pushing it.
Right.
It's, you know, it's like, this is the path that you're going to follow.
Right.
So,
and even if, I'm right there with you, man. So that's, I think direct energy weapons exist. I think they're using them. I think there's evidence to suggest that they're here, but we'll never really know. We're called conspiracy theorists until there's some type of absolute proof that we're right. But until then, whatever, man. So again, all my prayers go out to the people in Maui. I hope everything works itself out. I know it's really extremely hard to get aid there right now. I hope the Biden administration does something and give these people relief. But the next thing I wanted to talk to you about before we get into the Constitution specifically is we got the elections coming up next year. And I know you're seeing everything that's going on right now. DeSantis was the front runner behind Trump. And now you see this big push for Vivek, right? Have you heard of him?
The Indian immigrant guy?
Yeah. Well, he's a natural born citizen.
Oh, is he?
Okay. Okay. Hold on. So maybe he's fooled me. So I'm curious to get some of your thoughts on this. I've watched a lot of his videos. He seems to be very Obama-ish when it comes to speaking. Very well informed. Very well speaker. And that's one thing you should be alarmed of if you're going to watch a politician. When you hear someone like Vivek have a conversation, the alarm bell should start ringing, because that's what politicians are good at. But Dan, I'm very excited, because, dude, he's saying a lot of the right things. He's exposing BlackRock, a multi-trillion dollar company. He's exposing them. He wants to set term limits. Or not term limits. He wants to set an age on when it is you're able to vote. Or you at least have to take a test, a constitutional test, and know what's going on within the Constitution or within our government before you can actually vote. I forget there's a name for that. But he wants to put that into place. And he wants to abolish the education system in the United States because it's a failed state from Rockefeller education. So what I'm saying is, he's saying a lot of good things that I've never heard a politician say ever in my life, more so than Trump. Trump said, I'm going to drain the deep swamp. I'm going to drain it, I'm going to drain it, I'm going to drain it. He gets into office. I know it's harder, it's easier said than done, and he didn't do it. Kind of, a little bit, but, you know, Jared Kushner's in there. That's kind of weird, his son-in-law with all that shit.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts on Vivek, man?
He's a little too polished for me. I hear him and I hear, you know, somebody reading a script. Like you said, he's very much Obama-ish to me. The same, you know, Obama was never somebody that I believed a word that he said. It was all scripted. He was all reading it and he read it really well. And this guy is the same way. It's like, I don't get any sincerity from him. I don't get any kind of feeling that he's really informed about any of these topics that he's talking about, you know, or has any real concern about them. He's just been given these talking points and he's able to smoothly lay them out, but there's nothing behind it. You know, it's like, okay, you want to do all this stuff with BlackRock, fine. Okay, what exactly do you intend to do about the fact that BlackRock controls 40%, basically 40% of the stock market, the companies that are majorly traded on the stock market? They controlled 40%, and that's a huge amount of the economy.
The S&P, so it's more than that. Go ahead.
What is it that you're actually proposing to do? Because this is not this is not a little thing here. You know, this is not even something that's on the same level as say, you know, I'm going to build a wall down on the southern border. That's a minor thing compared to what he's talking about with BlackRock. So it looks to me like that's just a simple talking point, because what are your specifics? You know, why are you targeting them? What is your plan? You know, and what are you going to do about that if your intention is to derail them or disassemble them? What are you going to do with the pieces? Right? Remember back in the early 1900s, Standard Oil was this huge thing that Theodore Roosevelt disassembled. He had this trust busting thing, and he took Standard Oil and broke it apart into all these different pieces. Well, the largest oil company in the world is Exxon, and that is Standard Oil. So what did he really do? You know? And that's 100 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, what is his real proposal with all of this? I mean, it's a great talking point. You know, it's like the kid on the corner of the playground talking about how he's going to beat up the bully. Well, you know, I'm going to get that bully. It's like, yeah, okay. Well, he's right over there. You know, let's see your plan in action. You know, what is it you're really planning on doing? Because we can sit over here and talk about it all day long, but what are you going to accomplish? I mean, because in the end, they control so many companies with so much capital, or not capital, capital is the wrong word, with so much money. They have so much money invested in so many different directions that you know, they are dictating to these companies this woke policy, this woke agenda. You know, they're behind the whole Dylan Mulvaney Bud Light thing.
Right. So real quick, let me just say this. So what kind of sparked Vivek, he was very, there were some questionable things. If you look up prior videos in like the early 2020s, 2021, 2022, and there were some videos of Vivek saying, hey, I think people should wear masks. There were videos, you know, there was just some of those videos out there that exist. And he does address those videos on TikTok. You know, he's garnered hundreds of thousands of viewers. You know, people call him out on his BS in the past. And that was kind of what alarmed me as well when it came to that. And I listened to his responses and I'm like, okay. But when it came to like the ESG scores and BlackRock, I think that's kind of what was the tipping point for him, because he's a self-made billionaire, a biotech guy when it comes to pharmaceuticals and meds, which obviously that's another red flag right there. Alarming bell rings, blah, right. Blah, blah. And I can't remember the specific instance, but they wanted him to conform to the woke ideology. And he did it first. And he did it, and he did what they said, and he's like, okay, I did it. And they said, well, that's not enough. We want you to do this. And he's like, okay, I'll do that. And then they kept pushing him and pushing him and pushing him to a point where he's like, dude, I've done everything you've wanted me to do. I've done everything you've wanted me to do. He's like, enough is enough. He's like, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not doing it anymore. And like, it crossed a threshold, Dan, to where he's just like, that. It's what made him want to run for president, is what when he saw what they tried to put him through to give him an ESG score. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, dude, I don't trust the process either. But it's just like, Trump said he was going to drain the swamp. He didn't drain the swamp, Dan. So it's like, what do we do, you know?
Well, I don't think, personally, I don't think that, you know, you change horses in midstream. I don't think there's anybody that is capable of doing anything with the situation that we have other than Trump right now.
But when you have someone who's saying the same exact things that he's saying and more, Trump has doubled down. From what I've heard, he's doubled down. This was a couple weeks ago. He doubled down, or maybe even a month ago. Trump doubled down and said, this time I'm really draining the swamp. He's like, if I get back into office, all of them are gone. The deep state is gone. So he's doubled down on them. Like, dude, you've said it once. And then you were at a correspondent dinner praising Hillary Clinton. He did that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know he did a lot of good things, but I'm like, You have someone who's doubling down on what they said. And again, he exposed what they were really doing in Syria. He said, hey, we're here for oil. He met with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. He did a lot of good things. Gas prices were good. 401ks were good. Inflation was good. Jobs were good. So I get that. I'm down with that. I'm going to ride with you on that, Dan. I'm going to ride with you on we could piggyback off that again. If we could get that economy back with Trump coming back into office, I'll sign up for that all day. But if Vivek, mm-hmm. if Vivek is saying he's going to do more than what Trump had said he was going to do and more by exposing BlackRock, I don't think I've ever heard Trump talk about BlackRock.
I don't think so either.
That's huge, man. That's some big shit right there.
But the thing that I think that BlackRock is an issue, but I think we have bigger issues to mess with. And I think the reason that I think that Trump is the way to go with this stuff is that he's been in the fight and now he understands the fight. You know, Vivek is getting this stuff handed to him scripted, and he's reading the cards and he's doing all this stuff. He's saying all the right things, but who's writing the script for him? You know, he went through and he agreed to do all this woke stuff and then he rebelled against it. But if he is legit, if he is sincere, you know, the thing is that he's going down the same path and making the same mistakes that Trump has already made. So now Trump has the opportunity to come in and say, my eyes are open now. Because he kept a lot of people that he shouldn't have kept. He trusted people he should not have trusted. You know, James Comey is one of them, right? He trusted the FBI. He believed that the FBI was legit. And so did some of the other people that came in with him. So if we're going to bring in somebody new, you know, and say, okay, well, you made a mistake and you know, you didn't get the job done, right? It's one thing to look at somebody and go, you know, you didn't get the job done because you're totally incompetent. And it's another thing to look at somebody and say, you know, you didn't get the job done because you made these mistakes. And look at it and go, is this something that somebody could learn from, or is this something that's just it's just built into them and they'll never recover from. And I think he can learn from those mistakes and move forward, because since he's been out of office, I think we've seen that whole swamp deep state really rise up and expose itself. You know, the whole January 6th thing, that is the biggest bunch of nonsense. You know, there was no insurrection. There was no violence, you know, except what was provoked by the police and provoked by the Antifa. You know, there was, you know, they've never given credit to how many people were there and who was actually there. You know, they've wanted to say that it was all Proud Boys and you know, these other fringe groups. Well, it wasn't. It was a whole lot of people. It was grandmothers and grandfathers. It was people who were, you know, 70 and 80 years old who were retired. It was people who usually are at work on those days, who took days off of work that they never miss. They took days off of work to come there. People who brought their kids because they thought this was an important thing. And the situation is that scared the deep state so much that they absolutely went to war against regular America. You know, the FBI going to all of these PTA meetings and writing down license plates of parents. You know, they've had hearings now in the Senate and in the House where they've been talking to the FBI about this. Why were you going and writing down, you know, license plate numbers of parents at PTA meetings? Why were you guys doing that? And they haven't come up with a good answer for it, except for the fact that they're trying to absolutely terrify average Americans who are fed up with what's going on.
Yeah, and they got to do something. They're not just going to bend over easily and take it how they're supposed to. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I completely understand that. There's plenty of evidence. Tucker Carlson just had the chief of police at the Capitol during the time, and he came out and said that. I watched the full interview, but there's a lot of fuckery that's going on within that whole investigation. Oh. And I will tell everyone this, man. Parler was a very up and coming app at the time. It was rivaling. I mean, honestly, it was almost like TikTok in a sense, but for Republicans or Twitter, whatever it is you want to call it. And I specifically remember laying in my house, just watching January 6th unfold, and you just see, and literally people in real time were just like showing, this is weird. This cop's doing this. This cop's letting us come in. This cop's doing this. Like this is really weird. That was real time shit, man, that people were posting.
Yeah.
Real time shit. And we're just supposed to forget about it and act like it never happened. And this was an insurrection by people who were mad about the elections and blah, 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 blah. And everything's coming to light. I completely agree with you on all of that, Dan. Trump is the most fit to come in if he was to get a fair election and win and come back and do, if he says it, drain the swamp. He would have the most success in doing that. And if he doesn't, a lot of people are going to change their mind on Trump. I promise you, man. If he says this time, this is his, you know, he knows he's well-rounded, he knows the situation, he knows the people, and he goes in there and he wins, and he doesn't drain the swamp, man, I'm going to have some serious questions.
It's going to be worse than that. It's going to be a lot worse than that. I mean, we're much further down the road than I think a lot of people realize. If Trump is a fraud, okay, If Trump actually is not what he says he is, if he gets in there and he is not legitimately doing everything he can to drain the swamp and expose these people and get rid of them, then the next thing that happens is going to be what we're experiencing now by 10 times. That will be it. I mean, we the stuff that they're doing right now is so far down the road. If Trump had not gotten elected in 2016, then everything that we've been experiencing now, plus some, because he derailed a lot of things that they were doing, would have already happened. This whole pandemic nonsense, this whole fake pandemic, fake, you know, whatever you want to call it, That whole thing would have been unleashed after the 2016 election and into 2017. That was the original plan. You know, so all of this stuff that has been going on here with all the stuff that Biden's been doing to raise gas prices and export jobs again and shut down the economy and all of that stuff. That was in the works for the term that Hillary Clinton was supposed to be in. So the there is no recovery if the swamp does not get drained by whoever the next president is, or if we get another term of Biden, there's no recovering from it.
No, I understand that. So that brings me up to another point, and that's called fair elections or rigged elections or whatever it is you want to call it, because same thing with Parler. Still existed during that time, obviously, and it showed a lot of corruption and showed a lot of video evidence of mail-in votes or fraudulent votes, sorry, is the word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those videos are hard to find now of mm-hmm. election fraud. And I remember specifically that day, man, like my eyes were glued on Parler, just watching video after video after video after video and just seeing in my eyes what is corruption. And for Trump to have 3 actual court cases, I guess, and he had filed for what, like 50 or 60 cases or something like that, but only 3 were heard. And for those judges in those instances to strike it down and say that there was no election fraud whatsoever, there was none, doesn't exist. What you're saying, you're fucking crazy, that doesn't exist. And then I'll give credit to TikTok, man. They do ban people. They do not allow certain types of content. But occasionally you'll get that little black internet or dark internet, sorry, a dark web type of footage on TikTok that you're not supposed to see, and you see it. Because they do let the video be uploaded for a certain period of time, then they'll take it down a couple hours later if they don't like it. Uh-huh. And you see some of those videos, and you see this lady, and I think this video still might be up, and I'll send it to you tonight. She said that whenever she was a poll watcher, and I think it was in Pennsylvania. I could be wrong. It might have been Georgia, or it might have been another state that was up in question. And she says she remembers seeing absentee ballots. And whenever she was looking over the ballots, they were in sequence, Dan. Like, in sequence. Vote 1, vote 2, vote 3. Like, it wasn't like that. She said it was like 2022, 2023, 2024, 2025. She's like, that never happens.
Right.
And then she went
There's
on.
There's no possible way it could happen.
Right. And then she went on to further say that all the signatures were similar. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if that is not evidence enough that there was some type of tomfoolery going around in the elections and these judges are striking down Trump, we're already a failed state. We're already a failed constitution. You know what I'm saying? A failed constitution at that point. So it's like, what's to say that Trump doesn't deal with that again in the up and coming elections? They'll take TikTok down next time. Next year, people start uploading all this shit on TikTok. TikTok's gone, dude. They'll fucking just get rid of it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things, and this is one of the big points that you know nobody wants to talk about. This is what I would have an answer as far as Vivek is concerned. Okay, I have a solution to that. Okay, ban all political parties, every political party. No political party is legal at all. You cannot be a member of a political party because a political party has an agenda that is outside of and antithetical to the Constitution, right? That is an absolute solution that we can see clearly, because where does the election fraud happen? The election fraud happens because you have Democrats and Republicans counting votes. They have an inherent interest because of their party affiliation in the outcome of that election being what it is that they want, right? So they are already highly motivated not to count the votes, but to make sure that the votes that they want get counted. Does that make sense?
100% it makes sense.
And so, you know, it's like...
Hold on. So I'm with you. Ban political parties. So what is the alter to that?
Well, we don't... There's no need for a political party to go through, because one of the things that political parties do is say you want to run for a particular office. Okay, one of the first things that you're going to run into is there is all these hoops that you have to jump through the process of filing to get elected. There's a certain percentage of a certain number of signatures you have to have and all this other all these things have been put in place by the political parties. Now, you choose to become affiliated with one of the political parties, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in order for you to get on the ballot, you have to get the approval of the party. And the party is not the people who vote. The party has actually got members. There are people who are members of that party, and they pick who gets on the ballot. You and I don't get a say about it, really. You know, they pick through them, and they say, you can be on the ballot, you can be on the ballot, and you can't. Right? And it's after you've jumped through all these hoops to get to a certain point, then you run into the actual political party system, where the political party system, for, you know, using whatever criteria they have, you know, they say you're the person that we want to be on the ballot. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. And it shouldn't come down to a group of people who are already in a party and have an ideology of what it is and how they want the country to be. It shouldn't be that way. You have a specific individual who has a vision, I guess, for the country. And hopefully that vision is built and based upon the morals of the society that we live in America, right? Traditional values. And I'm not going to go down the Bible way, or the Bible belt, or whatever it is you want to call it, with God and Christianity and Jesus, which that seems to help. That seems to make people have a purpose and do better in life. So I'm not going to negate that fact. But what I'm saying is, I guess I'm curious, Dan, on one of you, let's say we get rid of the party system like you're describing, and mm-hmm. I myself want to run for president, and I just go out there and I say, fucking Paul Weiss is running for president, man. I'm running for president. Obviously, I have to have a big enough microphone or voice for people to even want to entertain what it is that I'm saying.
Right. But here's the thing is that once we get rid of the parties, okay, you don't have to have an agenda to run as president. There's not a whole lot of things that you get to say because this Article 2 of the United States Constitution already says what your job's going to be. It's already laid out, right?
What is it?
It's everything that's right there in Article 2. You become the executive. You are the one who is responsible ultimately for making sure that all the things that Congress is responsible for, the legislation that Congress constitutionally passes and has the authority to pass, gets implemented, that it is actually executed, right?
That's it.
And you're responsible there also as the gatekeeper, where you go, yeah, Congress, that's not legal. You guys don't have the authority to do that. But as long as we have these political parties and our presidents have an agenda, it lines up Congress and the executive to be working with each other. Even when you have Democrats in control of one branch and Republicans in control of another branch.
It should never be that way. It should never be that way. There shouldn't be a conglomerate of people who have a hold of the House or a hold of the Senate, where they hold majority vote. And then they get to dictate for 4 years what it is 300 million people live their lives like.
Right.
Like, that's fucking insane. That's ridiculous. How did we even get to that point? And I know we've talked about it on the podcast, but that is infuriating, man, that we've even gotten to that position.
Because you have a political agenda. You have people who have a political agenda. And that political agenda, it doesn't matter if it's Republican, it doesn't matter if it's Democrat, it doesn't matter if it's Libertarian, doesn't matter which one, Tea Party doesn't make any difference. It's a political agenda that does not align with the Constitution. And the importance of that is not that the Constitution is there to dictate to us, it's that it's an agreement between you and I about what the government can and can't do. And that's the foundation, that's the basis to start from.
Real quick, I just want to state this. People come in and they talk about the Constitution. Let's specifically talk about what the Constitution is initially, what it means. The Constitution means freedom for people. And it doesn't come for free. It comes at a cost, the Constitution, and abiding by it, right? No one knows what the Constitution truly means in the United States. You do. I don't. But do you really, right? Have you really, have you or I, had, have we abided by the Constitution and done the things that what the Constitution states to make sure that the Constitution stays a valid document for eternity, right? I think that was kind of the ultimate goal of the Founding Fathers, to say, hey, this is what morality is in a nutshell. This is how you get a large amount of people together. And at the time, it wasn't 350 million people. I know that. It's outdated. It doesn't work. It was, that was in the 1770s. There's too many people now. It doesn't, it's just not going to work. That's the whole purpose of the Constitution, the greatest document to ever live, minus the Bible, some people might say. But in my opinion, the Constitution is, they saw the future. They knew that this piece of paper with the words that they wrote on it would have such an impact on a society that it could continue to grow with however many amount of people were present in that time. That is the right. Constitution. And people want to say that that's not what it is, but it is. So can you just, sorry, I went on a rant there. Can you lay a little credence to what the Constitution is on top of that, I guess? Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Well, the basis of it is that it's a contract between you and I about you and I, the people of the states themselves. I mean, technically, when we really start talking about it, there is no such thing as an American. You know, you're from Missouri, I'm from South Carolina, you know, wherever, you know, those are the republics that we each belong to. And those republics come together through the Constitution to have a cooperative environment in which we can accomplish something as a whole, as a unit, and still remain independent, right? Still be able to take care of certain things. As long as that foundation, as long as we recognize that foundation and we keep that, right? We maintain that, the problems that need to be solved will become apparent, right? And it doesn't have to be dictated from Washington, D.C. down to us. It can be taken from the states, and the states themselves can begin to talk about it and then send it to Washington and say, okay, this is something that we need to have taken care of. And if it's not within the powers of the Constitution, there's an amendment process to handle it. But it's absolutely inappropriate to have political parties trying to solve these problems, because 90% of the time they're trying to solve problems that either the government has created or that these political parties have imagined.
Okay, so that you brought it back to my attention, and it was political parties that we were talking about. So what is your suggestion, Dan? Let's say we get rid of political parties. What type of future does that look for America? What kind of landscape does that involve? Because 1776, there weren't political parties, right? At least so we're told. There's nothing to say that those motherfuckers, those OGs, didn't have their affiliations and in their minds some type of political party on each side. I don't know. I'm not suggesting that. I wasn't in 1776. But what does that look like if that were to be implemented today?
Well, let's go back to 1776 and let's look at the political landscape there. Okay, because one of the things that's important to remember is that the country was not unified. You had people who were pro independence and you had people who were solidly in support of the king. So there was political divide at that time. You know, and as things moved forward, as the revolution progressed, and then there was victory on the side of the colonists, you know, for all of that, the loyalists kind of got, you know, pushed to the sides, and then the political what are we going to do now kind of ideas started coming up. And that's where, you know, things kind of got distilled into the Constitution. But one of the important things to remember about the Constitution and the people who wrote it is that the Constitution itself was written in a manner so that you and I would be able to read it and understand it and not have to look and say, hey, Thomas Jefferson, what did you think about this? Or, hey, John Adams, what did you think about this? And that be gospel, right? They wanted to bring their political views into this debate, have them brought into the Constitution, right? And then be able to have that debate, settle it out, and then walk away and be like, I think we did the best we can. Let's see where this goes. But unfortunately, there were people who were vehemently opposed to certain things within the Constitution. One of the big debates that you always hear about is the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, the people who were very much opposed to a strong central federal power, in Washington, D.C. And then the Federalists who wanted that strong central power.
To me, that came into being, I feel like that was just wealthy people, extremely wealthy people saying, hey, we need to find a way to have a grip on, we need to put our presence in the Constitution without putting ourselves in the Constitution. We need to have power over the people. To me, Dan, just correct me if I'm wrong. What you just described seems like, man, like America was thriving, everything was going well, and there came to a point where you had a whole bunch of rich people just bored of what it was that they were doing. Like, dude, we want to control what's going on here. That's kind of what it seemed like to me. I could be wrong.
No, it wasn't. It was not. I mean, that's a take that, you could have with it. And I think part of that comes from the fact that so much of what we've been taught as history has been polluted with communist ideology. But the fact is that not everybody who was at the Constitutional Convention was a wealthy individual, and not everybody who participated even in the leadership roles during the Revolution was a wealthy individual. So it really wasn't wealthy individuals who were doing that. It really came down to this idea of what would be an effective form of government. And a lot of people looked at it like you have to have, they looked at the king, right? That was the basically the kind of government that they were familiar with and comfortable with, where you would have somebody who was an actual dictator, but they envisioned this dictator in this constitution, in this new America, this constitutional government as being, a good guy. Well, when you endow someone with that much power and authority, it's almost impossible for them to not abuse it. Even people with the best of intentions, or even the people with the highest moral values, they're going to run afoul of situations like George Washington did. George Washington violently crushed a rebellion, the Whiskey Rebellion up in Massachusetts, used the military to crush this rebellion. And apparently, from what I remember out of it, he didn't have a particularly good understanding of what was actually going on. And he did it based on his moral foundation.
I guess he didn't
think that liquor was a good thing.
It's weird for me to think that for such a long time on Earth, and at least for what we're led to believe, the 14, 15, 16, 17, and 1800s, that when you go to Europe, or you go to, I guess, specifically Europe, or I don't know if Russia was the same at the time, that it was ruled by kings and queens for centuries. Like, here we are in the United States, and it's been 300 years, well, a little under 300 years, 250, whatever it is, of the Constitution being supreme over North America. And now we're starting to have quarrels with it. And there's been quarrels with it, and there's been amendments that have silenced those quarrels. Women's rights, human rights, all those types of things. And now we're getting to a point where there could be a breaking point with political parties ruining what it is to be the Constitution, where we might need to make another amendment. And I think people forget that we can do that. We can make another amendment. But when you're talking, Dan, when you go back that far, it's hard for me to believe that in 1776, when the Constitution was ratified and all these things were going down, that there wasn't any type of influence by people who had money. That's hard for me to believe, man, because for centuries, that's exactly what it was. Kings and queens ruling the world. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're told.
Right.
And for them not to have an input on what this is strange to me.
Well, you have to also remember that in America, wealth was a very different thing than what it was in Europe. You know, these monarchs, these dictators, these individuals who had hereditary power had also hereditary wealth. So they had not done anything to gain that wealth, right? It was just given to them. That was just something that they inherited. Over here in America, it was a completely different deal. I mean, even if you had inherited the wealth that you had, it was from your father, right? Your father had earned it, and you had spent some amount of time observing that happen. We're talking about, you know, in the period of time between when the colony started and the revolution happened, this was a wilderness. People were fighting Indians, you know, the native savages.
Indians
were fighting Indians, and the colonists were fighting Indians, and the colonists were fighting the French, and the colonists were fighting, you know, pirates, and they were, you know, this was not like over there in Europe where, you know, these monarchs had been sitting on thrones for generations, you know, and could just simply at the wave of their hand decide that you know, your property was their property, and you know, you were no longer an okay individual and throw you in jail. Over here, if you started something like that with somebody, there was a good chance that they would be, you know, coming to talk to you, pulling out a saber and saying, we're going to fight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these were not, even if they were wealthy individuals, these were not soft little nampy-pampy kind of people.
Right.
You know, these were people who at a drop of a hat could be called upon to say, listen, our city is getting ready to be attacked. You have got to pick up a gun. You got to pick up a hatchet, and you got to be ready to fight.
So in essence,
you know, so it's like,
in essence, they're real thugs, and not even thugs. Yeah. Everyone was a thug at the time. No one was not perfect or an individual of what it is to be harmony. Everyone was a thug, or not even a thug. People were willing to, they would be willing to defend themselves and their property and their land. And their morals. They would just defend it at all cost.
Nothing had come to them easily.
Right.
And they were not going to give it up easily.
Exactly.
So you know, when I think the important thing to remember about, you know, that period of time and the people who wrote the Constitution is that these were people who were in a very serious situation that had real consequences that could happen very quickly to any decisions or actions that they took. So when they're having debates about the Constitution, you know, it's not like a high school debate. You know, it's not like the Model UN. You ever been to the Model UN or heard about the Model UN?
I know I haven't.
No, it's a thing that you know, high schools and colleges do, where, you know, you send delegates and you guys
pretend to be the
UN and you debate all this stuff.
Right.
It's not like that. There's no consequences to that stuff. These guys were living in a situation where the decisions that they made on a daily basis and the decisions that they were making in writing the Constitution had real consequences for them and for the people that lived around them that they were not going to be able to avoid. So the debates that they had were serious, and they were trying their best to construct something that would accomplish, that would actually build a workable government. They knew an experiment. They were going out into uncharted territory, but they were doing it with absolute sincerity and seriousness. You know, this was not just some kind of, this wasn't kids playing, you know, playing moonshot in the backyard, you know, pretending they're on a spaceship. These were guys who were like, okay, listen, if we screw this up, the Iroquois are over here and they're pissed off at us already. The French are over here. You know, actually the French were allies of ours during the revolution. But just imagine that just a few years earlier, we had been at war with the French. You know, there's all these hostile forces around. including the one we just beat, Great Britain. We just beat Great Britain. We have an absolute need to, as quickly as we possibly can, form a stable government that can unify all of these colonies, because the danger is not over. We are in a dangerous situation. And so people were looking at it, and certainly there were people who were wealthy in that position. But I think that if they had come in and been saying, you know, well, I want to see how I can best protect my wealth, everybody else would have been like, you know what, get the fuck out of here.
That was a time where the middle class had rule.
Yeah.
That was a time where
you could easily move. In America at that time, you could easily move from poor to rich and rich to poor. You know, the middle class and all of that stuff, there weren't, speaking of it as classes, was just didn't work, because the fluidity of it was just that much. This was such a dynamic environment in the colonies that wealth and poverty, you know, could go from one day to the next.
So
guys were buying ships. Guys were building and buying ships here in the United States, in the colonies at the time. And they would load them down with things to send back to England to trade. If that ship sank on the way over, they could be ruined. Every bit of wealth that they had worked their entire life to put together could be lost.
And that shit happened.
Yeah, and that shit happened. And you know what? In a year or two, or maybe even just in a few months, they could build that wealth back up.
Right.
You know, so that's the kind of environment that we're talking about. We're not talking about, you know, what we see so much today, or what we have seen for hundreds of years in Europe. Europe is not even a close comparison to America.
I understand what you're saying, and like I'm big on the saying of the victor writes history. And in mm-hmm. that moment in time, I think you're completely right that the founding fathers were the victors of that history, and they wrote it. And there were many other people who wrote about it as well. And I've never read any of those books, minus the Constitution. I've dabbled into that, and I need to. Throughout the public education system, you know, you hear about some of that as well, Paul Revere and all those other types of things. Mm-hmm. I would like to get my hands on people who have accounts of living in those times, and try and understand truly what it is that they were living through, which most likely it's going to be what you just described. And I think that that's a beautiful moment in human history, if how the Constitution was established is true in its truest form. On how we think of it and how it's described, if that's truly how it happened, that's a very beautiful thing for humanity. And I think that that's what we have to try and get back to, and that's what we try to have to understand, is that it's a common group of people that want the best morals for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting close to the end of the hour, man. And this is something big. This is something I really wanted to bring up with you, because it riled up a lot of people. And that's the Supreme Court. And people think that the Supreme Court have authority over the Constitution. Uh-huh. And I know you would have to say otherwise. But within the Constitution,
I will say to those people that they're absolutely wrong. And there is nothing that they will be able to bring up or prove to hold water as far as that argument.
Dan, let me just read this, because in all the comments, in all the comments, this is what people refer to. Whenever the title of the video was Johnny explaining shit. I can't remember. I could pull up my phone. It's right there, but I don't want to because I'm lazy. Was just saying how does the Supreme Court have, like, I don't know. I'm going to bring it up. But anyways, this is Section 1, Article 3. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court, in such inferior courts as the Congress may form time to time, ordain, and establish. The judges both of the Supreme and inferior courts shall hold their offices during good behavior, and shall, at stated times, receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. So there is mention of a Supreme Court, but is that the same mention when they say Supreme Court? I don't think that they thought it was the Supreme Court of which what we have right now.
No, they absolutely not. As a matter of fact, further on in Article 3, it states what the absolute duties of the Supreme Court are. And there is nothing in there that says anything about the Supreme Court having the authority or any kind of remote kind of power to interpret the Constitution. The Supreme Court is governed by the Constitution. So the Supreme Court, just like your children, if you were to leave your children with a babysitter and go out and you left a list, you know, left a list with the babysitter and left a list with the kids, and you said, these are the things that you can do and these are the things you can't do, and you came back and that list was not followed, right? And the kids said, well, you know, the babysitter said we could do it. And, you know, the babysitter said, well, the kids wouldn't listen to me. It's like, that's all out the door. Here's the rules. You know, you, babysitter, are never working here again. And you kids are going to bed right now. You guys are all in trouble, right? Because we've got the list. There is no authority granted to the Supreme Court in from any perspective to interpret the rules by which they are governed. Those rules say what the Supreme Court can and cannot do, what cases it can and cannot hear, and it does not have any authority to dismiss a case that's brought before them. They have to hear it because they serve us. As the Supreme Court, all that means is there is no court above them. Once it goes there, that's it, right? You don't appeal the Supreme Court. Right. You don't. That's it. It is the Supreme Court. That's the top. That's it. But that does not mean that the Supreme Court gets to say, you know, has supreme power, where the Supreme Court can go, well, you know, we think that the president should be able to do that, so we're going to say that he can. It's like, no, the president's authority is specifically, you know, clearly laid out in Article 2. It says very specifically that this authority that you're trying to give him, grant him, is withheld. So, no. Does that make sense?
No, that makes sense. But that's not how the Supreme Court's looked at right now. The Supreme Court,
right? Everybody wants to try and you know, go along and get along and try and be smart, appear to be smart. It's like, no, you're not appearing to be smart. What you're doing is you're appearing to be ignorant because you won't read what it is that the actual rules are. You know, these people who want to argue that the Supreme Court is allowed to do these things, show me where it says they're allowed to do that. That's what I would say to them, because yeah. I'll show you where it says they're not. I'll show you that it says in, you know, Article 9 or in Amendment 9 and Amendment 10, you know, it specifically states that our rights exceed what is listed in the Constitution, and the powers listed in the Constitution are all that the government has. They don't get any more. So when the Supreme Court comes back and says, you know, well, you know, the police don't actually have to have a warrant to arrest you, it's like, sorry, Supreme Court, you just committed treason. If you decided to do that, you just committed treason because you just violated the Constitution.
But that's never happened in human history, has it? Where they've been accused of treason, like the Supreme Court. That's never happened in human history, or at least the United States history, that no. I'm aware of. I have no idea.
Right, because the problem ends up being, you know, you mentioned earlier about NPCs, right?
Yeah.
Mentioned there's a whole lot of NPCs out there that have suddenly been given this idea that because they have an opinion, that means they know something, because right. They can flap their gums and say some words that there's some validity to it, and there's not. But the people who have an agenda, who want to push a political point, will manipulate those morons and get them stirred up and make them seem like they're smart. It's like, no, you're not. You don't have a basis. There is no basis to what it is they're saying. But those NPCs, you know, you get them stirred up and wound up, and they're all excited because they have an opinion that somebody agrees with and is listening to them. It's like, that's just the same manipulation that's been going on for centuries.
Yeah.
That our Constitution, by the way, one of the things that the Constitution was intended to prevent was that kind of manipulation of the masses.
Right.
That's why we're not a democracy. democracy is not any part of what we've got going on.
No.
We're not a representative democracy. We're not, you know, any kind of democracy.
Constitutional republic, baby.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, you know, not everybody was meant to vote. This idea that everybody's supposed to have a vote is just wrong.
And we've talked about it, man, and I completely agree with, like, that type of discussion. But, Dan, that was a powerful talk on the Constitution, man. Damn, dude. That honestly, dude, this is one of the best conversations you and I have had, honestly, in my opinion. It just felt very powerful and very just beautiful, man.
Well, I enjoyed it. I always enjoy it.
No, I mean, I always enjoy it too, man. But, like, out of all the podcasts we've done, man, like, I just... paying attention to every word it is that you were saying, man. I don't know. It was just a good conversation. And I think it needed to happen in this type of environment. I don't know. A lot of people who are spiritual and people who are in tune with what it is their soul is or whatever it is that they are, where they don't really abide by politics or identity politics or government or any of those types of things, they don't really fancy these types of conversations because... Mm-hmm. I get it. You know, it's not spiritual. It's laws and regulations and blah, 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 blah. But in order for us to have gotten where we are now, the Constitution had to have happened, and it did. And unfortunately, we have to fight for it to be supreme again. And I think that this is one way to do it, via podcast and having conversations.
It's like, I think it was Plato. Plato said... the fate of good men who fail to pay attention to politics is to be ruled by evil men. And those words are coming true today.
100%, man.
Mm-hmm.
Plato said we got
to pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah. He said that shit.
And so you can be spiritual, you can do all that stuff, but if that's what you want to do, you know, you're basically leaving all of those decisions to people who do not have your best interests and have their own selfish, greedy interests at heart. You know, I mean, it's like I've said, and people really don't like it when I say this, but it's like I say to people all the time, we created the situation that we're in. This is not something that's being done to us. We created it. You know, by failing to take responsibility, by failing to take action, and by allowing these people to get away with this stuff, allowing these NPCs to bully us with their, you know, nattering and nonsense, you know, we've created the situation that we're living through now. And it's only us that are going to be able to stop it.
And so, I think that's a beautiful way to end it, man. Because that's an action-packed hour of fucking sweet-ass content, in my opinion. Sweet hot apple pie, man.
Hell yeah.
And I think...
Maybe some good stuff to get the people on TikTok stirred up, too.
Dude, I'm hoping so, man. I think they've kind of cut on to Talk Junkies a little bit and have suppressed a little bit of content, you know. But I'm still going to upload all the shit, man. I don't care. I'm going to keep it rocking and rolling. I'm at 13,900 followers, so I'm going to keep it going, man. And I think that there's some good videos in here where we'll keep it rolling and we'll do it again soon, man.
Yeah. Anytime. I'm always up for it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you, man. I'll put a link down below. I don't, you know, I usually go through the, all the good stuff towards the end, but we've had you on so many times, man. I'll put wherever people can find you down below. His name is Dan Cox, Facebook page, the Constitution of Us. I don't know if it still exists. Did you get it back yet or no?
No, I didn't get it back. I'm still working on it, but it's still there.
Dude, you just need to create a new one, man, and just do the same shit. And do the same shit you were doing, and you'll get the same following, I promise you.
Yeah.
Especially with that beard of yours you got. Rock on.
Looks sort of like one of them founding father kind of guys, huh?
Yeah, I'd say a little bit. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Dan Cox joining Talk Junkies. I hope you all enjoyed this video. Best thing you can do for this type of video is hit that like button, hit the share button, press subscribe. And to all our junkies out there, stay fly and ring the bell. All right, one sec, Dan.